Hello there, and welcome to yet another episode of Musings on Golf, where great storytelling runneth over today with our special guest, Jay Randolph Sr., whose career in sports broadcasting spanned more than 50 years. Amazing. My name is Kelly Elbin, and along with my great friend and partner, the Pied Piper himself, Bob Bupka, we'll also chat about the two sides of the professional game. We'll look ahead to an exciting weekend of football and golf. Bob, first off, Jay Randolph Sr., you've known him a long time, special relationship with him and also with, unfortunately, his late son, Jay. What an interview our fans and friends are going to hear from him.
I say one of the proudest things that I've accomplished in my lifetime is doing some golf with Jay Sr. and Jay Jr. I didn't realize until we had him on Musings on Golf the magnitude of his drilling down in the world of sport. And I'm talking Olympics, I'm talking baseball, I'm talking golf. He did bowling. I mean, I think it was the finest interview we've ever had by a long shot here on Musings on Golf. I know for sure that our listeners are going to thoroughly enjoy what Jay Randolph Sr. has to say.
And I think anytime you get the names Bob Jones, Henry Longhurst, and Jack Buck into a responses from a guest, you have someone who is not only well-traveled, but his voice as well, kind of like yours, Bob. It's so distinctive. It's carried so much weight throughout the years. And it was just real joy to hear from him. And he packs an incredible punch, doesn't he?
He was one of those interviews, to be perfectly candid, if we did an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, we would not run out of things to ask him, because every time we ask a question, he gives an answer, and that almost begs another question, because we were taken aback by the enjoyment of what he had to say. I mean, here's a gentleman that's simply legendary and a darn good, nice person. That's what I love the most about Jay Sr., and then, of course, becoming good friends with his son, Jay Jr., who left us way too early in this life. He had a lot of talent that his father had. Probably the only ones, you know, you take the Buck family, father, son, they're pretty up there. And then I got to go with certainly the Randolph family as far as combined talent of a father and son.
Well, Jack and Joe, two St. Louis legends as well. We all know Joe Buck from Fox Sports and Jack for many years calling radio Monday Night Football. Bob, it's an interesting week coming up. You got the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, of all places, where the NFL shunned for years and years. You've got the LIV event coming up in Las Vegas this week. You've got the annual craziness, the fun times of the PGA Tour event at the WM Phoenix Open. Looking back quickly at last week, Wyndham Clark 60. Bob, it may not have been a PGA Tour record, but 60 at Pebble Beach, unbelievable. And in those conditions, an extraordinary round of golf.
Well, it certainly put to rest, very much so to rest. You know, Wyndham Clark wins the United States Open last June, literally coming out of nowhere. Did have one win on the PGA Tour, but to put on that kind of performance where he shoots a 60, just amazing. I know he would have liked to play another 18 holes to make it a 72-hole win, but I'm sure based on the quality of that 60, a 54-hole victory is still going to taste mighty good. And, you know, I'm starting to come around. This Wyndham Clark may have a little more ammo than I originally thought.
Well, and for good reason. I mean, his last two wins, Los Angeles Country Club, U.S. Open, and Pebble Beach at the AT&T. Now, as you said, that with the unbelievable weather in California, there was no final round. I think LIV Golf really benefited from that, Bob. They didn't have any football to compete against. They didn't have a PGA Tour event to compete against. So their first event in Mexico, Joaquin Neiman ended up beating Sergio in a playoff. John Rahm was in contention. For the folks at LIV Golf, I don't think it could have been a better start to their third year.
Yeah, if you scripted it, couldn't have come out any better, as you alluded to very accurately. You know, when you have a Sunday with no football and no golf besides LIV, That's really a stroke of luck.
Yeah, it is. Be interesting to see what happens this week, rating wise and interest wise, in Las Vegas and on television for the live event. I want to talk to you for a minute about this $3 billion that's being invested by a group headed, well, that includes Mr. Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, and also John Henry and the Fenway Group. $3 billion being invested into the PGA Tour. Bob, what does it mean? And I don't get the sense that the PGA Tour and the PIF, the Saudi group, I don't get any sense at all that there's any hurry, any need to get that relationship done. As a matter of fact, they got this deal done with this other group a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah, you're right about that, Kelly. It's all a big mystery. I don't think anybody on this planet, including the people probably involved directly in putting this together, has any true idea of the entire magnitude. I mean, they're saying that, you know, players are going to get part of the money. What happens if a player, you know, doesn't get his card the following year? Does he still get part of the money? I mean, I got a million questions that I would like answered before I'd be very comfortable in this new deal. I've heard it on many sports outlets referring to it really as a sham. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I know major sports broadcasters are not going to call something a sham unless they have pretty good reason to do so.
Yeah, and look at one of the first things that Wyndham Clark said after winning, after he was declared the winner, was that he chose legacy over live. Okay, so he decided to stay on the PGA Tour. He had a caveat. It was for this year. So there continues to be battles there. Live Golf took John Rahm. They've been talking to a lot of players. I just get the feeling that there's going to be this tug of war for a while. And again, I'm not sure it's in the best interest of the game by any means. But Bob, you have to say, if you look just at the names on Live Golf, however you might feel in regards to the playing in shorts and shotgun starts and all, a lot of recognizable names out there.
Yeah, money talks,
it does.
You know, and it's not a knock. There's no object, you know, that they can't overcome because they got unlimited funds. And
yeah.
I think Liv is going to continue to grow. I think it's going to be a major headache for the PGA Tour. And the only way that this is going to be resolved, they're going to have to come up with an agreement that Liv is happy with, the PGA Tour is happy with, and then mm-hmm. we can move on. And speaking of moving on, that magical moment in the history of Musings on Golf, before we hear that incredible words from Jay Randolph Sr., let's hear some incredible words about William and Harry, the luxury lifestyle.
William and Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitting inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to WilliamandHarry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4-3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, how very special our guest is today. For 2 decades, he was a member of NBC Sports coverage of the PGA Tour, yet his career accomplishments over half a century went far beyond the fairways and greens. He spent 21 seasons calling St. Louis Cardinals baseball games on TV. He worked 3 Olympic Games. He's a member of the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. And interestingly enough, he was born in the same town as my father. What a thrill to welcome the man for all seasons, the one and only Jay Randolph Sr. Welcome to Musings on Golf, sir.
Kelly, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to chatting with you and Bob.
Jay, you know, people may know you as a broadcaster, but I know you as a person, and as great a broadcaster as you are, you were even a better human being, and it was a privilege and an honor for me to work alongside of you on occasion, and also with your son, Jay, who's no longer with us. But Jay, you had to be so proud of Jay. He was so good. He loved broadcasting so much. It was in his blood. People would say that to me. They'd say, it's in Jay's blood. And I said, yeah, look at his father.
Well, he was a joy. All of my children are fabulous, but it was tough to lose Jay. And, of course, he left us at a relatively young age. But he loved the game of golf, number one, and he understood the game and connected to the people in the game so well. And, of course, the last job he had was managing a golf club here in the St. Louis area. But I appreciate that, and he enjoyed being with you as I've enjoyed being with you. You certainly are a man who can open a lot of doors in the game and has had, you know, I think of my career, and I was thinking of it over the last few days. I've had such great luck and a remarkable career, but so have you. You've covered about everybody that has meant anything to the game.
Well, I've been very fortunate. And before we get to your days with NBC Sports, I've been dying to ask this question. How did you get involved initially in broadcasting?
Well, I was in school at GW after being in the service for a couple of years, and back at GW on a golf scholarship in 57 when the United States Senator from West Virginia, Matthew Neely, passed away. My dad, of course, had spent seven terms in the House of Representatives starting in 32, but he had worked then after 46 when he lost a close race to a war veteran that came back from the wars. But he'd been out of politics for 10 years, although he kept his fences pretty well mended, and he decided to run for the two-year short term of what was remaining of Neely's seat. And I went back. I left school at GW and went back to West Virginia to kind of help out in the campaign, and enjoyed that very much. And while I was there in 1958, a gentleman in Clarksburg, West Virginia, where I was living and helping with the campaign, his dad was elected in that year to the two-year term. He lost his sports director at WHAR Radio, a gigantic 250-watt station that rolled out about 40 miles on a good day. But he asked me if he'd lost his sports director to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and he asked me if I'd like to try to broadcast some high school football, basketball, and baseball, the Babe Ruth League baseball. And I said, well, I'll give it a try. I mean, I was trying to finish my college down in Salem, where my dad had graduated from. And Salem is a little school at Salem, West Virginia, that my family had been very involved in over the years. But anyway, I started doing the broadcast, and the sales manager at the station got an idea about the fact that we ought to bid on the West Virginia University rights. They'd been in the same hands of the same station for years, and the university wasn't making any money on it. So we put in a bid, which we were allowed to do because it was a state school, and we got the bid for 2 years. And I got to do West Virginia. Jerry West had just left to go to the Lakers, but prior to them, we had Hot Rod Hudley there. And then after that, we had Rod Thorne, who I covered. And Rod went on to have a terrific career in the NBA and coaching and working in the commissioner's office and everything else. But that's how I really got started. And I did my first golf broadcast, I remember vividly, 1962, when I went up to Pittsburgh and covered the Open at Oakmont. And I was able to cover and interview Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer in the playoff on that Monday, when Arnold, who was an unbelievable favorite, of course, playing in Western Pennsylvania, a spar about 50 miles from Latrobe, his hometown. But that was my first actual live or taped broadcast of any golf. That started. I wouldn't do any golf again until I got to Dallas, where I was doing the Dallas Cowboy games. That's a whole other story how I got there. But I was doing the Cowboy games, and Charlie Jones, who worked for us at NBC and had a terrific TV career in Dallas going, and he asked me to join him to cover the Dallas Civitan Women's Open. And I did that for a couple of years. And I was sitting in a hotel in Oklahoma City when Jack Buck, who had done a basketball game before me in a doubleheader in Oklahoma City, sat down. We were having a couple of pops, and he said, "Hey, you know anybody who's really a good football announcer? We've lost our guy in St. Louis with the Cardinals." And I told him about a couple of fellows, and he told me what the job was worth and how much it was, and it was more money than I was making, and I just had a raise turned down from Gordon McClendon, the great broadcaster who owned the station in Dallas. And to make a long story short, I came to St. Louis and met with Robert Hyland, who ran KMOX Radio, 50,000 watts this time, the number one sports station in America, and the man who really invented talk radio. And he hired me and started my career in St. Louis, which, of course, lasted a long, long time, except for the 9 years that I was in Dallas doing the Marlins. But I said in Dallas, I was in Fort Lauderdale doing the Marlins. We did move down there and thought we'd retire down there, but then we came back and I did four seasons of Sunday baseball with the Cardinals here, but also did a year in Cincinnati with Johnny Bench, and a year in Atlanta when Skip Carey was taken away from his job there to do at the NFL that they got. So I had a wonderful career doing baseball. I loved baseball, but as you well know, golf has been my favorite.
Nobody does any sport any better. Matter of fact, Kelly, I think we got to change it. We don't have a guest with us this week on Musings on Golf. We have a living legend that touches so many sports. And the beauty of Jay Randolph Sr., he has as much expertise doing baseball, horse racing, football, you name it, his golden tones. Put out descriptions that are just unbelievable. And once again, I said at the top, it's a real honor having you on the air with us here on Musings on Golf this week. Kelly, you gotta ask Jay about the legendary U.S. Senator Jennings Randolph.
Yeah, you know, Bob, you're right on so many fronts in terms of describing our guest as a legend. And it's, for me, it's so neat to hear the names Charlie Jones and Jack Buck and Skip Carey as Jay's been talking about. But Jay, your father really was a very influential member of Congress for many years. It did lead you, and you understated a little bit your time at George Washington University, where you are a member of the school's Athletic Hall of Fame. But that led you to have that opportunity to go to school there in D.C. But tell a little bit about your dad, who he was, and the influence he had, not just in West Virginia, but throughout the land.
Well, he was a remarkable man. He had the ability to communicate with people as well as anybody I've ever known. And he lost the first time he ran for Congress. came back and won in 32, and very much a part of the New Deal and the Roosevelt administration. And he and Roosevelt were great friends and worked tirelessly. Dad was the chairman of the district committee, which made him the honorary mayor of Washington, D.C. And that was really kind of special as a kid growing up. And I got to go everywhere and do everything. During the football season, we'd go see the Redskins with the legendary slinging Sammy Ball quarterback, and he was my favorite athlete. And we even had, I remember the basketball team was coached by a man who had a remarkable career a little later on, Red Auerbach. And the Washington Senators, I got to know the family, the Griffith family, and we had a very dear friend. His name was Du Bois, Herbert Du Bois, and he ran errands for my dad and drove me around a lot and just was a dear friend. He worked at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and he knew everybody in town, and he was a real character. And he used to take me to all the best events, and we go see Jack Kramer's tennis group come and play at Old Uline Arena. I mean, and I remember going down to East Potomac Park when I was about 14. He took me down there. I couldn't drive yet, but I got to see Joe Louis, and he was playing in a golf exhibition, and I just had such a great young time in D.C. D.C. was a small town in those days.
Yeah.
And politics was really fun to be around and to meet so many of the people who were involved in government at that time. And, of course, during the war years where we lived on Reservoir Road, there were a lot of generals and admirals and the service people that lived there and a lot of people that worked in the government. So that was very interesting. And one of the guys lived right in back of me. His father was very instrumental in developing television, and television was just coming into its own. Used to watch the wrestling from New York with Dennis James, and there was very little TV. I, as a kid growing up, loved the radio, the Lone Ranger, and Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons at Grand Central Station and all of that. But Dad was wonderful to me. He was a great tennis player and a great basketball player in college. But
Jay, your dad wasn't a golfer, right? He no, didn't introduce you to the game, right?
No, it was really my aunt and uncle Bab who introduced me to the game. They lived out in Bethesda and were members of Bethesda Country Club. And they were also at the Edgewater Club, which was a tennis club in Bethesda. That's where Dad played a lot. And in the winter months, he would play squash down at the University Club right next to where the old Russian embassy used to be. But anyway, I had a great, great time growing up in that atmosphere there. I could hop on the bus or the streetcar and get up to Capitol Hill and walk right in the door and into my dad's office. And he'd take me underneath and walk me over to the Capitol, and we could have lunch at the dining room, and I could sit up in the gallery. And I mean, it was just a remarkable situation. And listening to my dad speak and talk all those years, a good deal of it rubbed off on me. The way I hope it rubbed off on Jay Jr. But it was just a wonderful time. And at GW, we won the Southern Conference Championship, and I won the individual championship. But during that time also at Bethesda, I met and played against Dean Beeman, who, of course, became commissioner and was a wonderful little player. Amazing, one of the great competitors I ever knew. Dean and I knocked heads at Bethesda, and I had a junior membership there. And Harry Grismer was my pro. And, you know, Kelly, you talk about your dad. He was at Burning Tree. But right. We had Whiffy Cox at Congressional. and we had Fred McLeod over at Columbia, and we had George Diffenbaugh at Kenwood. And these names might not be familiar to too many of your friends, but they were all great men.
Oh, and legendary locally, you know, for sure. I have a good friend, Bob Dolan, who was the longtime head professional at Columbia Country Club, where Mr. McLeod was for many years. And Bob retired recently. And I told you, Jay, when he retired, that meant he was the third head professional in 100-plus years at Columbia. That's unbelievable. Hey, but one other thing before I kick it back over to Bob. Give our listeners a sense, please. You know, we watch any major televised sports now and the production that goes into it, whether it's the Super Bowl coming up later this week or just a conference basketball game. Man, the production is so crazy every game. When you started out, you had what, handheld cameras? You had limited 18-hole. You didn't have 18-hole coverage. How many holes did NBC Sports cover at the start?
Well, we didn't have handheld cameras when I started out. just had the cameras on the towers, and they had to take them up on these big pulleys. They were bigger than me, which is hard to believe. But, you know, I think back to those early days, and I think back to some advice that I got that helped me as far as golf went. I first met Henry Longhurst, the legendary writer and golf announcer from Great Britain, in 1954 it was, at the Canadian Amateur at Kahnawake Club in Montreal. And I got to know Henry, who was there with another legendary writer named Leonard Crawley from the great London newspaper, The Times. And then when I was in service in England, I got to visit with Henry quite a bit. I played in two British amateurs over there, and I got to play in three U.S. amateurs over here. But I was just astounded by listening to Longhurst for the first time on the air. We had a TV and next to where we slept, and I turned it on to watch the British Open, and Henry was doing the commentary, and he was all alone, just commentating on everything that he saw. And he was on for like 3 hours, and then he said he was going to take a little time off and go to lunch, and they just showed the pictures and there was no commentary at all. And then he would come back and do the commentary, and it was just Longhurst. And years later, when I did my first and only Masters in 68, Henry was there doing the 16th hole. And I remember on the day before we started our coverage was just Saturday and Sunday coverage. There was no Thursday or Friday coverage. And there was just 9-hole coverage. And really, it was more like 7-hole coverage. Mm-hmm. Our coverage, if I remember correctly, started at 13 or 14. I worked at 14 with Byron Nelson, which was a great joy. And Byron was wonderful to me. But CBS had hired me to do 3 golf tournaments that year. I was working for CBS Radio here, as I mentioned, KMOX before, and I had not made the move to NBC yet. Henry said to me at lunch, and he had had a couple of martinis, which was something he always had, at lunch, at dinner, and I think early in the morning sometimes. But anyway, he said, "Jay, are you nervous about doing your first Masters?" And I said, "Oh, Henry, I'm so excited." I said, "I just hope it'll go well." And he said, "Well, I want you to remember one thing." And he took a long pause, and he said to me, "Just punctuate the pictures." Greatest advice I ever got. We could give it to a lot of announcers today who talk entirely too much. But that was the greatest piece of advice I ever received as far as calling golf goes. Just punctuate the pictures. He was a dandy.
One of the all-time greats. And
I just want to finish up by saying, of course, my dad, after 10 years in the aviation business as vice president of Capital Airlines, went back and, as I mentioned earlier, ran for that Senate seat and got it. And he spent, over 40 years on the Hill. And He did so much. Probably he was proudest of the 26th Amendment to the Constitution, which he authored and pushed through after a long, hard battle. That gave the 18-year-olds the vote in America. That was one of the things he was so very proud of. But, I mean, there was so much that he did, and he was beloved, really. And he was considered, along with one or two others over the years, to be one of the greatest orators that ever stood and made a speech on the floor of the Senate.
Well, they're lucky you didn't get elected to the Senate, because I guarantee you, you'd be in the running for that title also.
Well, the only thing I ever ran for was the city limits.
Hello.
All right, Jay Randolph, Sr. I pride myself in doing this show always to ask fair questions. That's my mandate. But I'm going to violate that principle right now by asking you this one. Are there any moments or a moment that stand out in your broadcasting career?
Well, there are many, many, many moments, but I'm often asked that question, Bob, and I have to go back to the Winter Olympic Games in Sapporo in 72. I was doing the ski jumps. I was on just outside of the city of Sapporo, giant mountain there with about nearly 100,000 Japanese people out there to watch. And it was the 70-meter jumps. And the event was won by an 18-year-old Japanese boy who had grown up just 18 miles down the road on a farm. His name was Yukio Kasai. And it was the first gold medal the Japanese ever won in the Winter Games. And it was my pleasure to have the opportunity to call that event and to call his win. And I can still, when I talk about it, the hair on the back of my neck stands up. It was, and NBC played that all throughout the entire Olympic Games, back and forth, back and forth. But Yukio Kasai winning the 70-meter ski jump had to be the greatest single thrill I think I ever had in my career as far as calling the action.
Well, my single biggest thrill in my broadcasting career is getting to work and know Jay Randolph Sr. and Jay Randolph Jr. Those are my two biggest thrills.
That's very kind of you. I appreciate that more than you know.
Jay Sr., as we close things up here, I want to ask about your dream foursome of players. But before that, I know that golf remains in your blood. You keep track of what's going on in the PGA Tour. What do you think of golf coverage when you watch it today, as we talked about how different it is from when you first started?
Well, of course, it's the equipment is just amazing what we can do today. I frankly think maybe there's too much information on the screen. it's gotten very cluttered. But the Golf Channel, which Arnold had a lot to do with getting it underway, has been fabulous. And the game has continued to grow, and the ability of the players is just beyond anything you can imagine. I wish your dad was around these days to give his thoughts. And he had such a calming effect on problems that maybe he could solve some of the problems we have in the game today. But the talent is remarkable. The equipment is remarkable. The coverage is remarkable. It's just mind-boggling to see what they can do today. And I loved covering both the men's and the women's tour. I have to say that it's been fabulous, the advances that have been made technologically in the last 30 years.
So before I turn it over to my good friend and yours, the Pied Piper, Bob Bupka, let me ask you, Jay Randolph Sr., if you could round out a dream foursome, whether that those individuals are alive or no longer with us, who would be those other three players?
Well, you know, Kelly, Bob was talking about unfair questions. That's an unfair question. It really is, because I had the pleasure of covering so many great players and playing with so many of them. Snead was my all-time favorite. Sam always would say to me, if I could have seven shots out of one, seven opens. And he's probably right. And as you know, he lost an open here in St. Louis to New Worship after a controversial measuring situation at St. Louis Country Club. But Steve was a great friend. Bob Dolby, of course, who worked with us at NBC. And being at the Masters when he won was a highlight for me. And I have to say that Bob is one of the greatest people. I would have loved to have had the chance to play with Bob Jones. When I went to the Masters in 68, I had the great privilege of being taken up to his cabin. He was in bed. He was ridden with arthritis. But I was able to sit by his bedside and chat with him for about 15 minutes. And that was one of the highlights of my entire career, just getting to meet and talk with Bob Jones. And then, you know, you got to put in Tiger, and then I'd have to put in Hogan. And I'm way past the four players. Okay. And then have to put Palmer in because Palmer was my great friend. And I can't tell you how much fun and how honored I was to know Arnold the way I did and to be with him on so many wonderful occasions at the Hope Classic and other events. He was the right man at the right time to really help the game make giant strides.
No question. Robert, I'll let you bid our good friend a fond farewell.
Yeah, you know, Jay Randolph Sr., we talked about your fondest memories, and you have a ship full of memories. And now, from this day forward, my fondest memory in broadcasting is having the privilege and honor of talking to Jay Randolph Sr.
Well, you're very kind. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sure I tried to throw too much into too short a time.
Not at all.
I didn't punctuate the pictures as well as I should. Great to talk to both of you, and fun to visit with your audience, and I hope they've enjoyed it as much as I.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert. And the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Boy, Bob, I hope our listeners enjoyed hearing from Jay Randolph as much as you and I had so much fun in chatting with him. A truly legendary guy, a pioneer in many ways in the industry, and the breadth of all the sports he covered, just remarkable.
More remarkable, I can personally attest to the fact that Jay Randolph Sr., as talented as he is also as nice a person that you would ever hope to work with, spend time with, get educated by. Jay Randolph Sr., certainly one of the legendary broadcasters of all time here in the United States.
We thank Jay Randolph Sr. for joining us on Musings on Golf. Bob, the Golf Course Superintendents Association continues to do great work each and every day, and their CEO, Rhett Evans, will be joining us next week on Musings on Golf. And down the road, Bob, a fellow by the name of Tom Watson is going to drop by to spend a few minutes with us. Looking forward to both of those interviews.
Yeah, Rhett Evans, I'm excited because I have word that he's in the planning stages anyway, of climbing Mount Everest. I have never spoken to anybody. I know a lot of people that had a lot of mountains to climb, but none of those were, you know.
Literally, right?
Right.
From the mountain climber, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, thanks for joining us, signing off. Musings on Golf.